Nursing shortages back in the news. A school nurse comes to the rescue. Fears about home care funding. And we're going to take a look at code management and CPR leadership. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Hey, well, good day, and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. In fact, it's coming out on Christmas Day 2009, so I want to wish everybody a happy Christmas and a safe holiday. Hopefully not too many of you had to work today, but whether you're pulling a shift or not, I wanted to make sure there was a Nursing Show episode coming out on this Friday, and there'll be another one coming out next Friday on New Year's Day, too. I just want to make sure you all know that it's available for you and ready to go. I want to especially welcome any new people listening to the show. We've got a lot of new people that usually come on around the holiday time. People get new iPods and new MP3 players, and they find our podcast, and I just want to welcome you to the show. Make sure you head over and check out our website, nursingshow.com, pretty easy, and you can find links there for the show notes right at the top of the page. Click on that to go back and look at any previous episode, follow up on the links in the news, and also the additional resource links I always provide for every tip of the week. And welcome to the show. Of course, if you'd like to comment on any episode, you can leave a comment over there while you're checking out the site. And you'll also find other important articles and links, including some great student study aid resources. I'm trying to put some regular articles up there under the student study tips. So you can find those links there as well, right on the front page of The Nursing Show. If you'd like to comment and by email, you can send those comments in to comments@nursingshow.com, and I will get those checked out. I always love to hear from all the listeners, and I try to respond to everybody's email. So please keep those emails coming, and I look forward to hearing more from all of you. Let's jump on into the news, and I lead off with a story that kind of caught my eye because we haven't talked about it very much. We talked a lot maybe about a year or so ago, and before that here in the Nursing Show, about nursing shortages, and quite frankly, the recession made a lot of those nurse staffing shortages go away for the majority of the communities out there. I know a lot of rural and remote areas and some of the inner city hospitals still have some shortages and staffing issues, but a lot of nurses who are planning on retiring stayed in the workplace to keep going while they hoped that their nest egg came back as the market recovered, and maybe it has a little bit, but also, we had a lot of people returning to work. People who were previously working in nursing went home and maybe to raise children or left to go into other careers and opted to go back into nursing. And so these experienced nurses returned to the workforce. And so there wasn't much of a nursing shortage problem, but there was a lot of talk about the fact that once things corrected, once this economic bubble kind of corrected itself, we were going to end up having a nursing shortage again, and it was all going to just come back up. And so this is something that cropped up in an article from Columbus, Ohio, and it just talks about the nursing scarcity in some of that region's hospitals. The bad economy might make it seem like there's no shortage of nurses in Central Ohio, according to this article, but they are seeing nurses who are getting ready to retire and are going to retire as soon as things recover. And once that happens, they expect to continue to have major nursing shortages. Ohio predicting to be short 32,000 RNs by 2020. That's a lot of nurses and a lot of people that need to be filling into that workforce. And this is in spite of nursing schools graduating record numbers of students. So these We still need to address the nursing shortage, even though we've gotten a reprieve in that part of the job marketplace for the time being because of the recession, but it doesn't mean that it's not going to return as soon as things correct. And I thought this was a good article and a reminder for all of us to look at ways we can support nursing education programs in our communities, to mentor or encourage possible and potential nurses in we might know in high school, maybe somebody that you know in your community, a child of a friend, or perhaps even an adult, an established adult is looking for a second career option. There are a lot of different ways to come into the nursing profession, and I think that we can support them by showing what we do, by acting by example, and by mentoring and encouraging people that are planning on entering the nursing field. Moving right along, I found another article that caught my eye, and it was one of these community action articles, human interest stories, and it was a story about a school nurse who found a teenager who had an undiagnosed cardiac condition, and this school nurse, because of her training and her understanding of what goes on with patients, found out that this patient with an undiagnosed condition of Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome, WPW for those of us in ACLS terms, and that there was a problem with the heartbeat. This patient was having issues with irregular heart rate and rapid heart rate. And so this person, this student needed assistance, and the student was turning blue. The patient was found to be in cardiac arrest, and the school nurse began to assess and treat the patient. The medics arrived at the school, and they were able to cardiovert the patient and revive him, but nothing would have happened if we didn't have CPR occurring in the field while this patient was down. And so we need to remember this and keep in mind that good, high-quality BLS CPR skills are very important. BLS, basic life support, is very important. Understanding good compressions, understanding and recognizing when a patient's down, and taking action decisively. And we're going to talk about that in the tip of the week, but I wanted to point out this article. And, you know, when something good happens in your facility, or you know of a nurse in your community that needs to get a pat on the back, point that out to your local newspaper, to your local radio stations, TV stations. Let's get nursing in the forefront of our news so that people can know the good things we do all the time. Finally, I'll wrap up the news with a story about healthcare funding and the home care sector of patient care. And this is something that nurses are actively involved in. Nurses are probably the primary care providers in the home care environment. We oversee the patient care plan. We work actively with occupational physical therapy. We work actively with nursing aides and other in-home providers of care. And this sector is possibly in danger of having a significant amount of its funding when compared to other portions of the healthcare sector being cut. And this is a shame, it seems to me, because I think home care is probably one of the more effective care programs as far as cost effectiveness. If we can maintain a patient and care for them in their own home, provide them care in a location where they're away from all of the nosocomial infection risks when they are providing care, where we're assisting family members and community members with care, and these patients are a less of a financial burden. If they end up in a nursing home with full-time around-the-clock care, if they end up in a hospital because of being in a group setting like that and being more susceptible to illness, infection, and injury, we can find that these patients end up costing us a whole lot more money. So I'd like to see the home care sector actually increased in funding. I think we should be looking at ways to increase our ability to provide home care for patients. And by doing so, we end up offering a cost-effective way that doesn't involve hospital time and still provides access to high-quality medical resources through nurses, occupational physical therapy and all of the other people that can work through a home care system. And I know there are a lot of home care nurses out there. I know a lot of you listen to the show. So I'd love to hear your comments back on this. Do you see this as more cost effective? Am I mistaken in that understanding? I'd really love to hear from you. So, you know, send in your comments to me here, or of course, you can always leave a comment on the episode show notes for this particular episode. Time for this week's tip of the week, and I talked a little bit earlier in that news segment about CPR leadership, and I thought it would be a good time to go over code teams and facilities and CPR leadership for nurses. So what are we talking about when we look at code teams and cardiac arrest management? Well, there's a couple of things we're going to look at, and I wanted to go through these here. Strong BLS skills. You need to start off with the basics and understanding. We're also going to look at leadership traits. We're going to deal with rhythm identification and some of the ways to review those things. Medical team tasks and debriefing, which is a very important part of any kind of code team, response team of any kind. And one of the things that I think often gets left out when discussing code teams in a facility and in a nursing setting. So we want to talk about debriefing as well. Let's start off with strong BLS skills. What do I mean by this? Well, first of all, you got to have a current CPR card. Most of you in the nursing setting probably already do, but I wanted to just point out to you that there's a reason you retake that class every couple of years, and the reason you have to maintain a healthcare provider CPR or BLS skill level. And that is just basically because those skills are important and they're the same skills used by everybody. And because of that, we can work closely together to understand and know where each other are coming from the different parts of the system. We need to focus on compressions. This is something that came out in the 2005 guidelines, and it is been shown again and again and again to have a strong impact on survivability in cardiac arrest, is that focus on compressions and also limiting the number of interruptions and the time of interruption. So we want to get back on that heart. And I liken this to a sponge in a bucket. You know, if you keep a sponge down in the bucket and you squeeze it and you let it go and you squeeze it and you let it go, that sponge keeps filling up with water because you got it down in the bucket. But the minute you take it out of that bucket, if you squeeze it, it's going to not refill with water. And if you just hold it up there and don't squeeze it at all, water's going to run out of it anyway. Think of that heart like that sponge. You need to get it back in the bucket. You need to get back on compressions and limit those interruptions. We also need to remember that we're going to resume CPR immediately after any kind of defibrillation event if we have a cardiac arrest patient. We don't check for a change in rhythm right away. We go ahead and resume CPR for 2 minutes, and there's a lot of strong science behind this, and you can review that. I'll have a link in the show notes to the American Heart Association site and their articles on code management, cardiac arrest management. You can look at some of the science behind these skills from the journal that they publish. After you have strong BLS skills, you need to have leadership traits. Now, the good news is, I think if you're a nurse, if you've demonstrated that you have what it takes to become an RN, one of the things we learn is we learn how to delegate. We learn some leadership traits, and we develop those traits because we end up being charge nurse from time to time. We end up assuming a leadership role. We end up leading our patients to healthier lifestyles, hopefully. And so these leadership traits are very important. What do we mean by leadership traits? Well, we need to have confidence in what we're doing. If you don't have a good confidence level in your skills, whether you're certified at the BLS level or if you're certified ACLS, Advanced Cardiac Life Support, you still need to have confidence in your skills at whatever level you are. And if you don't have that confidence, there are many ways you can renew that confidence. And I don't mean review, but I mean renew that confidence. And it may mean you need to review some skills. It may mean you need to take the class every year. There are a lot of nurses that will spend their entire career and never do CPR on a patient. And yet this is something that could have a huge impact on a patient's life because it maintains that heart viability so that advanced support can come in and take care of things, whether it's defibrillation, whether it's apply medications and get the heart into a rhythm that's shockable, whatever we can do. But it all starts with good, solid CPR skills, and that comes from good confidence. We need to focus on the tasks we have assigned. A leader doesn't just go off doing whatever they want. They need to follow a plan. And that plan is going to assign certain roles. And we'll go over those roles later on in this tip segment. But we do want to think about remaining focused on whatever our job is in the overall plan of code management. And your leadership is you could be the lowest person on the code team in skill level, but you still have a leadership role. And that is that you are going to be a leader in what you're doing, and you're going to observe what you know how to observe, and you're going to make sure that patient care is the best possible patient care from your perspective. We want to understand the process. So we want to understand some things, and we're going to talk about that here a little bit as well, but we need to know how all the pieces of the puzzle fit together. You need to understand good compressions, good ventilation, what makes ventilatory management so important, why we shouldn't overventilate our patients. These are things we need to understand, and that's part of that leadership trait. And you also need to be able to speak up, step in, and take charge. And this means that no matter who you are, you take the same CPR class that is taught to everybody else in the healthcare arena. Doctors get the same class. Everybody, nurses, aides, techs, pharmacists, whoever they are, they get the same CPR class. And that CPR class teaches the same things. So if something isn't getting done at your level of skill, you need to make sure it gets done. You need to speak up, step in, and take charge. If you're an ACLS certified provider, then you need to do the same thing at that level. If someone has misread a strip, if somebody has said that a certain medication needs to be administered and it is something that is already maxed out in the ACLS protocols, then certainly you need to go ahead and raise your hand, speak up, and make sure that they understand that you think that's already been done. And they can review the chart and make sure that we don't administer the wrong meds to the patient. And part of that speak up, step in, and take charge is that you have to have respect for the other team members. Everyone is working towards a common goal, which is to save this patient and provide care for this patient and bring this patient back to optimum level of health. And in order to do that, we need to work together. And if someone makes a mistake, we need to point it out, but we need to do so respectfully, and we need to understand that none of us is perfect, and we need to step forward and provide an educational opportunity rather than a disciplinary opportunity. What do we talk about next? Well, how about rhythm identification? This is something that many of you will need to review from time to time unless you work in a cardiac care unit, ICU, or perhaps a step-down unit or an ER. You still need to understand rhythm identification and at the ACLS level, identify certain key rhythms. So if you probably have an ACLS certification, you're more skilled at your rhythm identification, but if you've maintained that certification, you need to review your rhythms, you need to find a way to do that. And we have things that we've done on the Medicast, on the nursing show, all my various podcasts talk about ECG reading tips once every year and a half or so, because it's an important thing to review periodically. We want to review common arrhythmias that we're going to need to be able to recognize. This means the shockable arrhythmias like VFib, pulseless VTach. How do we recognize these? What do they look like? What about unshockable rhythms like PEA, pulseless electrical activity? That means that you could have a patient that looks like they have a normal sinus rhythm, but you have no sign of a pulse. And this could be the heart looking like it's beating, but we're not getting any movement of the blood. Asystole, another one, that flat line. You know, the thing they shock on TV, even though it's unshockable. You get me screaming at the television whenever I see that. But anyway, and also non-arrest arrhythmias. You need to be able to recognize your basic tachycardias, your bradycardias, and your AV blocks, because these all are part of the ACLS protocol, and understand how they fit into that picture. We also want to use mnemonic devices like things you might find for how to treat certain rhythms. And I found a great site for this, ACLS.net. It's got a lot of information. It's got all the algorithms for ACLS. It also has some great mnemonic devices to help you remember the process and the steps that are necessary. Because, like I said, as a leader, you need to understand the process for whatever level you're going to be participating. And you need to be able to anticipate what's going to be happening next so that you can be ready to jump in and do what needs to be done. Let's talk a little bit about the code team itself and some of the common tasks that we need to see done there. Now, this may vary from facility to facility. The names may change, but the jobs are the same. So you may have a different name for some of these things, but these are some of the common names I found in a couple of different locations, and your facility may use something slightly different, but I think all of the jobs are there. You have a team leader. This person is trained in ACLS and beyond. It's often a physician in facility setting, but it may be anybody trained at the ACLS level. Back before I was a nurse, I was actually a paramedic working in a small rural emergency department. There was only one doctor in that hospital after about 8 o'clock at night on most normal evenings. And so if there was a problem up in the ICU, the ER doc was up there. If there was a code in the ER, then I, as the paramedic, was supposed to run that code until the ER doc could get back down there. So it could be anybody trained at the ACLS level, including another RN. So be prepared to assume that role if you're trained in ACLS until someone else comes in to take over. We have a team coordinator, and this is different than a team leader. A team coordinator is going to be someone that oversees all of the jobs. So the team leader is kind of that 10,000-foot view. They're looking at the big picture. They're thinking about all of the physiological causes of what might have happened with this particular patient and the cardiac arrest, how to resolve those problems to bring them out of cardiac arrest. And so that's that. But what about the team coordinator? The team coordinator makes sure all the pieces of the puzzle are going to fit together so that when that team leader orders something or makes a decision about what to do next, that the pieces are there to enact and effectively treat this patient. Recorder is somebody who's going to be taking notes. They're going to be putting things into the chart and reviewing medications that are administered and at what time, changes in rhythm, and printing out strips and keeping them as part of the official record. And so this person should have, A, good penmanship. They should probably be ACLS trained, but they don't have to be. Often, this could be a critical care unit nurse, a cardiac unit nurse, or an ER nurse that is trained at ACLS. But it could be anyone that is able to write down things as they're dictated by the team leader or the team coordinator. Med nurse, this is a very important job because you need to be able to anticipate what's coming up. You need to look at the rhythm that's going on and have the next med ready to go when it's ordered so that you can either administer it directly if that's your job, or if you're just drawing it up, there may be two med nurses, one who's administering the meds, another one who's drawing up the meds in the correct dose for this patient. This is particularly important when you have pediatric patients because pediatric patients have all kinds of dosing that is non-standard, where you have a lot of the medications that are in pre-filled syringes for adults, but in pediatric doses, you have to draw up specific amounts depending on the patient. And so that can necessitate maybe one or two different nurses drawing up meds. Airway management. Now, this person is likely to be a respiratory therapist in a lot of bigger hospitals, but it could be anyone that's trained at whatever level of airway management is necessary at this time. It starts out with BLS airway management with a bag valve mask or a mouth to mask or mouth to a barrier device administering breaths for this patient. But eventually it will progress to ET tube and the placement of a definitive airway so that can be maintained. And this often is a respiratory therapist or a physician or a resident that is going to place that tube, and then someone else will bag them or put them on a ventilator. And finally, the CPR team, the people that are doing the compressions and are trading in and out. And this can be anybody. It could be a tech, another RN, an aide. In a home care setting, it could be a family member. But again, you're going to need to monitor these people. And if you're part of the CPR team, again, your leadership role is to make sure people aren't getting overly tired during compressions. Everybody at every level here has their own leadership role for their task that they need to make sure they're prepared to step in and take care of. So what about code team debrief? This is the most neglected thing I see in any kind of code team or mega code setup. It's something that I try to do every time I have any kind of critical situation or something that's unusual that's happened that we want to maybe review and do QA or QI for quality assurance or quality improvement. And certainly, we need to pull the team together and answer some questions, talk to each other. What went well? What didn't go so well? What could we do better? What did we miss? And these are, again, learning situation, not disciplinary situations, because we are now, hopefully we revived a patient. And if we didn't, is there a reason why we didn't, so that we can be better prepared to revive the next patient if we're on the code team? So this is a very, very important part. And while I'm sure that this is going on in a lot of places, it is not listed as part of the code team and part of the code team process. And I think that's a very bad thing. I think we need to talk about things that we do and we need to review what we're doing. I know people are busy and this doesn't have to take very long, but 10 minutes sitting down in a side room, in a break room, and going around the room, everybody on the team gets to participate. Everybody's included. Everybody has an opportunity to speak up and is encouraged to speak up. And this comes down to the coordinator and the team leader need to encourage people to speak up. There are a lot of nurses, young nurses, and other members of the staff who may not speak up about something that they saw because they assumed the physician that was in charge of the code saw it. This is something that we need to make sure that everybody is included in this and encouraged to speak up. And we may find that very simple things, such as a stool kept with the code team that can be used for members of the CPR team that are a little shorter so we can get good height and good positioning for compressions on our patients. Otherwise, how are you going to do compressions effectively? And these are little things that could be found out based upon different people's focus on their own jobs. And it's a very important part of the process. I have some additional links in the show notes, so definitely follow up at nursingshow.com under the show notes at the top of the page. You'll find that link and go ahead and follow up on those things so that you can be part of the code team. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everybody that you need to check back in for the show notes for everything discussed in this episode. All of the news items, tip files, and other links mentioned are all available in the show notes for this and every other episode. And you need to follow up on the information because I can provide only general information here. It's your job to follow the links and look at the resources and see how they apply to your own scope of practice. I'll do my job here and get you as much information as I can. It's your job to follow up, make sure that the information gels with what you know and what you're supposed to be doing in your area. I'd like to urge all of you to comment and get back in touch with me here at The Nursing Show. You can reach me, of course, by leaving comments over at nursingshow.com. There are comment links at the bottom or near the top of every single article. You can also reach me by email, comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also get a hold of me over at Facebook, facebook.com/podmedic, or you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic. Time to wrap up the show, and I'll close out with some PodSafe music. More Holiday Fare for those of you that care to listen to Holiday Fare. This is independent music artist Natalie Brown with her version of Jingle Bells, a little R&B kind of version, I guess, and I hope you enjoy it. If you like what you hear, you'll find a link to Natalie's site in the show notes. Let her know you heard it here on The Nursing Show and support these independent artists. I want to offer my own heartfelt happy holidays and best wishes. I'll be back again, very first day of the new year, with the next episode of The Nursing Show. In the meantime, I want to remind all of you, I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, and please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
This is Natalie Brown wishing you a very safe and happy holiday season.
Snow in one hole. what fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Snow in one horse open sleigh.